Welcome to the CCFR Radio Podcast, your source for news, updates, and stories from the CCFR.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 216 of the CCFR Radio Podcast. I'm your host, Rod Giltaka. Thanks for joining me today. You know, it's been a while since we spoke. We're on our summer schedule. We're trying to make our way through that. But we've got a great episode for you. Today, we're going to make the draw for our custom CCFR Kailani cooler package, compliments of our great friends over at Kailani Outdoors. Thank you, Sean and the team over there for that. I also attended the IPSC, otherwise known as IPSC Nationals in Prince George, British Columbia, a couple of weeks back, a couple of stories from that. We've got an interview coming up with former Toronto police liaison officer and former Ontario Human Rights Commissioner Randall Arsenault, and that comes from our annual general meeting. Finally got that together, edited, and at a point where I can release it. Also, the CCFR is suing a federal politician for defamation. We'll find out who that is and why we're doing that. And we've got a few other things to discuss, some interesting stuff. So all that and more, the CCFR Radio Podcast starts right now. Thank you so much to our great friends over at Vortex Canada. They continue to support the CCFR podcast and the CCFR. Can't say enough about them. Check out all their great products at vortexcanada.net. That's vortexcanada.net. Vortex, the force of optics. In Canada, firearm owners understand the importance of safe, effective self-defense options. That's why we're proud to have Byrna as a sponsor. Byrna's less lethal launchers are designed to help protect you and your family without taking a life. Byrna offers peace of mind and a practical layer of personal security for Canadians who value safety. Learn more at byrna.ca/CCFR. That's byrna.ca/CCFR. A huge thank you goes out to our great friends over at the Saskatchewan Rivers chapter of Safari Club International. They do a lot of great work over there, including supporting the CCFR and the CCFR Radio Podcast. Check out all their great work at saskriversSCI.com. That's saskriversSCI.com. CTOMS has been a leader in tactical medical training for 20 years, providing military law enforcement and emergency services with life-saving skills. Through CTOMS Academy, they've made this proven, evidence-based training available online to a much wider audience. To celebrate their 20th anniversary, they're offering 30% off all courses with promo code CCFR30. Perfect for outdoor enthusiasts, sports shooters, and anyone who wants to be prepared for emergencies. Visit ctomsacademy.com to start training. All right, we're back. So I'm very excited. I get to share a whole bunch of interesting stuff with you guys today. Really excited. And it's been a while, right? Because we're on the summer schedule. Okay, first thing I do want to get out of the way is our new podcast sponsors, Byrna, reached out. They're having a sale. They asked if I would mention it. So I'm just letting you know. Everything, I think it's everything on the site. You're going to have to check for yourself, but everything is on sale from Byrna, 25% off till August the 24th. So if you're thinking of getting one of these Byrna pistols or something else from them, the time probably to do that is now. 25% off. Everything is my understanding. Go to Byrna.ca. That's BYRNA.ca. And you can take part in that. And since we're talking about sponsors, I do want to mention Sask Rivers SCI, CTOMS over in Alberta, and Vortex Canada. These three people, businesses, have been with us for so long, have supported us through everything we've been through. I just want to thank them all, and Byrna as well, for supporting the podcast and the CCFR. Just, we couldn't do any of this stuff without people supporting us, and I have a hard time describing how grateful I am for everyone's help and how obligated I feel to work myself to death on your behalf and for my behalf too. As a gun owner, I want these people out of my life too, but just, yeah, it's hard to even put it into words. I appreciate the help and I am so appreciative for your trust. So anyway, you're going to see, I've got some things to announce for you because we never take any time off here. I'm supposed to take a little bit of time off. I got a few days, but anyway, but you're going to see what we've been up to over here. All right. Next thing, we're going to do the draw for, speaking of companies that are there for us 100% of the way, Kailani Outdoors. So Sean and the team over at Kailani are always there to help the CCFR in every way they can. In fact, just to explain that, I don't ever ask Sean at Kailani Outdoors for anything. He comes up with things and then calls me and saying, I want to help by doing this. Like, awesome. I can't tell you. So if you're looking for a high-end cooler, because this is stuff they produce, right? Or what have you, go to Kailani Outdoors, just search for them on the net and check out what they have. They are supporting gun owners all the way. And we carry Kailani drinkware in the store that's monogrammed with the CCFR logo. You can always check that out. I use all that drinkware. It is fantastic, right? In fact, wait a minute, check this out. Boom. This is what I carry my water around with. Is I don't know what size this is, but this carries enough water that I got water for a day or two, and I keep this in the truck. So I actually use this stuff. It's fantastic. And that thing will hold ice for days, even in hot weather. It's pretty awesome. Anyway, I didn't mean this to be a commercial for Kailani, but they just do so much for the CCFR. They definitely deserve it. So Sean came and he said, hey, I'm going to custom wrap a couple of coolers, put together a huge package, and maybe you can offer that for people that are renewing their memberships, getting new memberships or what have you, or give donations. And I said, that's great. That's the Kailani CCFR cooler package contest, and we're going to do the draw right now. Okay, let's do the draw. And we've got random.org here, as mentioned. We've got our spreadsheet, and let me put the glasses on here. Let's have a look. The number range, I preset the number range already, right? So it's 1 through 26, 23. Let's check. 1 through, come on. Come on, man. 26, 23. Let's see. The last one is 26, 23. So we've got everyone's first name and then a little bit of their last name. All right, here we go. 2018. It's Jeremy from British Columbia. Jeremy, and his last name starts with a D-A. Congratulations, Jeremy Dagg from British Columbia. Awesome. Thank you to everyone who renewed their CCFR membership, who got a new membership if they weren't already a member and donated at least the minimum, I think it was $20 or something like that, got you a free entry into the contest. So thank you everyone for doing that and supporting the CCFR. We got a lot of stuff going on. We need a lot of help and I really appreciate it. Okay. And thank you again, Sean and the team over at Kailani. Okay. Next thing, keep your eyes peeled. We're releasing a new contest. We teamed up with three great Canadian manufacturers, and we are releasing a new contest. I can't tell you all about it right now. I'm going to do a specific video about it that will come out probably Monday or Tuesday next week. So that's at the end of August here. Okay. So keep your eyes peeled. It's going to be a really great contest. It's going to run for about 3 months, about 12 weeks. And they're going to be high-end rifles, and there's going to be a few winners. And these are probably rifles so high-end that you probably wouldn't justify buying them for yourselves if you weren't a competitor or whatever, right? So these are really special prizes that if you win one of these things, it's going to be, yeah, a great day for you. So anyway. That's all I'm going to say about it. New contest coming up next week. Next thing, the CCFR every year is the title sponsor for the IPSC Nationals. At least we have been for a number of years, and we were this past year. I attended personally IPSC Nationals up in Prince George, British Columbia. It was great. We spent the weekend up there, and a couple of highlights. I got to sit next to Murray Gardner, the man that is credited for bringing IPSC to Canada, whatever, 40 years ago, which was really great. I had a great chat with Murray, really great guy. And I got to say a few words to everyone at the banquet, so that was great. And I did have some important things to talk about, which was, that's why it was such a good opportunity to chat with everybody. And I met Jennifer Eichenberg, which was a real honor. Now, when I mention our journey from all the way from the federal court all the way through to the Supreme Court of Canada, and I always say, you know, just make sure that you understand we're not there alone. We're the only gun group that took that journey for sure, but we were not there alone. There were some individuals and groups there, And Jennifer Eichenberg was one of them. And I had never met anybody in person that's been part of this group of people that have gone all the way through the injunctions, through the cross-examinations, all that stuff, court of appeal, you name it. This group of people came with us all the way, and Jennifer is one of them. So I got to meet Jennifer, and I guess I'll see Jennifer again on November 9th and 10th when we are going to bring our case to the highest court in the land, the Supreme Court of Canada, and I'll actually have a chance to personally meet everybody else, which I haven't had that opportunity. So anyway, that was really exciting. So you can wish Jennifer and all of us luck there. So the big announcement, we are suing for defamation, a federal politician, but not just any politician. It's Yves Blanchet, the leader of the Bloc Québécois. Now, I'm going to go as fast as I can. I need to give you a little bit of background. We have other lawsuits that we've been going on for years for defamation. I think very long and hard about whether or not we sue anyone. And I think about that before we ever send a notice. You probably heard me say, if I send you a defamation notice, I've already made the decision to sue you. Those decisions are really important because they cost money. But depending on what ends up happening, what's even more important, or at least equally important to the money is the time that it pulls out of our team. This is not a core thing that we do, but it's a thing that needs to be done by someone. So as with everything else the CCFR does, it's not being done anywhere. We need to do it or nobody's going to do it, right? So the distraction and the time that's a real consideration. So, you know, like we have an action right now that's been going for 5 years, small claims court. In Ontario, you can sue someone for defamation in small claims. 6 days in court, probably 3 or 4 days of prep, you know, in the beginning and all the way up till today. I was in court for that, like literally last week, and it's still going. You know, like that's what it takes. So big actions like this, it's gonna probably take 20 days by the time it's done and years. So anyway, I think about these things very carefully. A lot of people lie about the CCFR. The Liberals do, the media does, the NDP does, these anti-gun groups, they lie about us. Random lunatics floating around on social media or limping around in real life, they lie about us. We don't sue everybody, but this one is so outrageous that we couldn't let it go. So I'm going to read you what Yves Blanchet decided to post on social media. I'll give you a couple more comments, but I just want you to know why we chose this specifically. So this was right after the terror attack on Bondi Beach. This is in Australia, the other side of the world. And it was an Islamic State-inspired terror attack against Jews celebrating Hanukkah on the beach with their families. And they killed a lot of people and they injured a lot of people. Okay, this is what he is posting about. Anyway, check it out. In the rhythm of events and hateful acts and words, once again of extreme violence from which we seem to believe ourselves sheltered here, like in Canada, I cannot explain why we still turn a blind eye to the gun lobby that feeds on this hatred and the growing occupation of civil society by radical propagators of violence everywhere in the free world. Now, he goes on with some other blubbering, inane nonsense. But think about that for a second. Islamic State-inspired terror attack against Jews celebrating Hanukkah. And somehow, the people responsible for it is the gun lobby in Canada, in here, right? He says, we believe ourselves sheltered here. And why should we turn a blind eye to those truly responsible, right? The gun lobby, apparently. Now, I have questions. And these are my questions. I would love Blanchet to tell me. Like, what is he trying to achieve here? Like, the act that was committed in Australia is so outrageously, unimaginably horrific. And then it's like, okay, well, who can I drag into this that I don't like? I'm going to try to make the gun lobby, you know, make them part of the reason, the inspiration to this. Like, or I don't know what he's thinking. This is me trying to theorize. And what is the outcome that he's looking for? Like, I'm a free speech guy, but if you want to know what dangerous rhetoric looks like, look only to the words of Yves Blanchet, the leader of the Bloc Québécois. Like we just couldn't let that go. We couldn't let that go. And I can only imagine, again, this is just me theorizing because he's not going to explain himself. We gave him the opportunity. Like, what are you getting out of posting something like that? Like, is this just some kind of narcissistic, like, yeah, you know, I'm just going to do this. Like, to me, I'm thinking, you know, my impression is like, he just thinks like, what are you going to do about it? You people scrounging around with your handful of gun owners giving you $40 a year. You're not going to take me on. I'm running the Bloc Québécois. I'm the leader of a federal political party. Maybe that's what he was thinking. I have no idea. But I'll tell you what the Bloc Québécois are getting out of this now. They're going to be dragged across the country to defend themselves in Alberta. It's going to probably cost them, depending if this doesn't get settled, it could cost them anywhere from $100,000 to $300,000, and it's going to drag on for 2, 3, 4, 5 years. That's what they're getting for this post. We sent him a defamation notice. I don't remember reading it. I probably did, but I was like, oh, I've seen that kind of thing before. So I'm paraphrasing. But it probably said, hey, if you weren't talking about us, let us know. If you were, you should probably apologize and take this down immediately. Otherwise, we're going to sue you if we don't hear back from this date. We gave him lots of time past the deadline. They ignored us. And you know what? You know what the only reaction was? He blocks me on Twitter. Yeah, me, for some reason. There are all kinds of ways that you can express your opposition to what we stand for or who we are or what my face looks like or whatever your problem is. But holy smokes, that is just, that's really truly outrageous. So anyway, congratulations, Mr. Blanchette. You bought yourself a defamation suit and yeah, well-deserved. Anyway, hopefully that wasn't too long. That was all I had. Let's bring Tracy on. All right, we're back and via the internet, we've got Tracy Wilson of the CCFR. Wilson!
I've heard that a lot this summer. How's your summer going?
That's going okay, I guess. I try to take time off, but anyway, and that's my story. That's it. I'm ending it right there.
Tried to take time off, being the operative part of that sentence.
Yeah, I got a few days off here and there in a row, which is good. But I'm going to try to sneak a few more before the end of summer, but there you go. What about you?
That's good. It's ticking away, so you better get at it.
It is. Yeah. It is. Mm-hmm. And it was a bit of a late start to the summer this year. At least in southwestern British Columbia, it was just, spring wasn't that great. So anyway.
We've had no summer. We've actually had the rainiest summer in recorded history in Ottawa with over 500 millimeters of rain so far since June 1st.
Nice. That's.
I know that you're surprised that I know that. But yeah. In my other job, I'm a weather lady.
Yeah. Is that what you're up to in your off time?
That's exactly right.
Awesome. All right. Let's get started. So the first thing that we want to do is at our annual general meeting, we had a couple of guests that we called, you know, had come up to the stage and we called them fireside chats, even though there was no fireside there. But we had a couple of really great guests, and one of them was Randall Arsenault. And we recorded all of these chats, and I just hadn't gotten Randall's done. We have it done now and we have it for you today. It's about 9 minutes and 22 seconds. But before we get go over to that, why don't you give us kind of an overview of Randall and some of the things that you talked about in this interview, I guess.
Yeah. So I love Randy Arsenault. He's an awesome guy. I call him the TikTok cop because he's, during the pandemic, he made all these awesome little videos from his patrol car. He's a law enforcement professional, former human rights commissioner. He's got a really great podcast called Canada Off Script, and just a really, really engaging guy. And we talked about his role in public safety and in policing. And yeah, I think the viewers will really like to watch this interview.
All right. So without further ado, let's go to that chat with Randall Arsenault.
So I want to introduce you guys to somebody. Officer Arsenault is our favorite notorious public safety professional. BlogTO wrote a great piece on him titled, "This Toronto Police Officer is Super Famous on Instagram and TikTok." Randy brings a unique perspective to the debate as a former law enforcement professional and human rights commissioner. A gifted storyteller with the motto, "If I don't educate, I at least hope to entertain." Arsenault has over 1 million social media followers, is a passionate advocate for mental health issues, and uses his frontline experience to create meaningful conversations that save lives. His funny, wholesome videos have over 250 million views, and he's the host of a popular straight talk podcast, Canada Off Script. He also has better hair than me. It's our sincere honor to welcome to the stage our good friend, Randy Arsenault.
Listen, thank you very much for having me here. And listen, I honestly, when you asked me to come here and speak, I've never had imposter syndrome before, but I feel like I do. But as soon as I pulled up and I saw all the pickup trucks, the pickup truck to car ratio is pretty high, so I knew I was in good company here. And thank you very, very much for having me. So I come from a police family. I'll just give a brief introduction. I don't want to make this all about me, but I come from a police family. I mean, a real, true blue bloods family. My father was a police officer for 30 years. My parents had five boys. Four of us became cops. My dad, who was also a sharpshooter and a sports shooter and a hunter. I grew up around firearms. I don't remember the first time I shot a firearm. I was that young. But I grew up around them. And when I became a police officer, I kind of thought that everybody who was going to become a police officer also grew up around firearms. I didn't realize how uncomfortable many of the officers were. I worked with police services right across the entire country in a variety of different ways, training and education and recruitment and such. And the gun amnesty program was brought up. I've taken part, of course, as a police officer in the gun amnesty programs. What they said is actually bang on. There's very few firearms that are being turned in by, you know, criminals. I do a lot of videos on traffic enforcement and speed enforcement. Listen, go easy on the traffic enforcement police officers, okay? The cops that are most, and I don't have the exact number, I'm sorry, but most of the firearms that are taken off the street, most of the best arrests happen through traffic enforcement, because I know it's a big surprise, but criminals also don't obey traffic laws. And really, the amount of arrests, people that are wanted on warrants, again, people who are on conditions not to be associating with, you know, others that are in the cars with them. It's just incredible.
I wanted to talk to you about something, though. So earlier in the business meeting, I was talking about a lot of the projects we've worked on at the CCFR. And one of those was, I call it the police chief project. And that was when we were hearing from police agencies that they didn't support this. I had a member who put together a giant spreadsheet with all the information to contact police agencies. And I did that. And it took a few weeks before I saw anything. But then we saw this flood on social media, you know, Kingston, Ottawa, TPS, everywhere, saying they are not going to be participating in the buyback program, confiscating firearms. But what is your take on it as a cop? You know, you've got the majority of law enforcement who are absolutely rejecting this gun grab and the rerouting of police resources away from fighting crime to chase gun owners around. Like, what is the logic there with the Liberal government?
I wish I had a better answer for you, but I'm actually surprised that so many police services have so publicly stated that they want nothing to do with the confiscation program.
For me, I think it's brave. You know, it is difficult. And when you talk about anti-government sentiment, I come from a very military family. I've got direct family members who are in the army. They aren't allowed to have anti-government sentiment. So to see law enforcement, you know, justifiably so, rightfully so, reject this, because cops want to do cop stuff. They want to catch bad guys, right? They want to take illegal guns off the street. They want to prevent or solve violence. Like, they don't want to chase around people who've done nothing to deserve it.
No, that's true. And a lot of the videos that I put out there, I talk very openly and publicly about the fact that morale in the police service right across the entire country is so low. You have more cops leaving than ever, not for retirement, just to pursue other careers. Also, you have, I could say this again, I don't have any direct numbers, but I have less people than ever asking me how to become a police officer, or if I think it's a good career, or, you know, what they should do to prepare to become a police officer, because the interest isn't there anymore. And that's why you see recruiting events right across the entire country. There's a lot of young people who just, they don't want to become police. They don't consider it an option anymore.
I know, again, coming from the perspective of the military, one of the complaints I hear a lot from the troops is they don't have enough resources to even practice, right? I mean, there's not enough ammo, there's not enough this, they don't get enough of that. I feel like it's probably even worse for cops. Like, I want my cops to be good shots, to be super proficient, to have tons of practice time. Like, I want that for them. And I feel like that's a major problem for law enforcement.
Yeah, 100%. And I would say that's a lot to do with funding cuts. When I first got, I got on the year 2000, by the way, we had a range at one of the divisions in Toronto and Scarborough. We had a range in the basement, and every shift cycle, you could basically go and get some more training ammunition. That stopped after about 10 years, you know, that I was on. It was strictly funding, and it was really, really nice. It was really kind of fun to be working a night shift and going for a lunch at 2 or 3 in the morning and, you know, set up some scenarios and set up some shooting drills and just have a lot of fun. That option's just not there anymore. I've also been very public about the fact, sorry, I keep looking over here. I've been very public about the fact that the police training is not sufficient now. Not just for firearms, but for recoil, pepper spray, your ASP, right? So your expandable baton, all your use of force options. Police only have to requalify once a year. But it's not even that you're learning how to use your use of force options once a year. It's maybe half an hour of training in that specific use of force option once a year. And then, you know, again, put back out in the street. And if you happen to use lethal force, which of course you don't want to, you know, it does happen. Police training is not sufficient. So the fact that they took that away, I couldn't agree with you more. And it's funding. It's funding. Again, I know I'm preaching to the choir here, but a critical incident for a police officer on the street is not perfect lighting. It's not, you know, one eye closed and, you know, the perfect ready position. It's something happens right in front of you and you're forced to act, right? So even the training that they receive, it's rushed through. I feel that way. A lot of other police officers across the country feel that way. So I don't mind saying this, and hopefully things will change.
And it's crazy to me. You've got a government willing to spend upwards of $1 billion, you know, and if we get provinces to force them to actually compensate people properly, you could talk about $6 to $8 billion to do a gun grab. And yet we don't have resources for police to do proper training and practice. Like, it's a perishable skill. We all know that as gun owners. And, you know, when people say, oh, only cops and military should have guns. And I think, man, I go to the range more than my local police, you know. If I had it my way, I would be investing all of that gun ban money into the communities that really need it. Where can we find you, Randy? Tell us all about it.
Well, thank you very much. I run a podcast now on YouTube. It's Canada Off Script. Actually, MSN just picked up the podcast, so it's seen right across, you know, right on MSN Canada Off Script. I'm known as Officer Arsenal across all social media platforms, Instagram and TikTok and X and everything else. But, you know, I'm fairly easy to get a hold of. So if you have an idea for something, please send me an email. And if you want to collaborate, educate, whatever that may look like, please, you know, send me an email and we'll see what we can do.
Awesome. You're going to stick around and have dinner with us.
Absolutely, yeah.
Talk to the people. Perfect. Yeah. Thanks for being here, Randy.
Thank you so much.
All right.
Thank you.
You know, that was a highlight for me, was meeting Randall at the AGM. I followed him on Twitter for a long time and we talked back and forth. And honestly, it was a bit of a treat. So I'm really appreciative that he came out and, you know, kind of reached across the aisle and hung out with us. And I hope everyone enjoyed the conversation.
Yeah, it was actually really good to meet Randall and to listen to his chat. He talked a little bit about police training as well, which is something that I'm interested in, have a little bit of a background, not everything, but just a little bit. So it was really good to hear a lot of the stuff that he touched on. Okay.
Absolutely.
Next thing, we get messages from people all the time on a wide variety of topics, but you've got a couple of messages recently regarding the buyback that you want to share. And I guess we're calling it buyback horror stories.
Yes.
But I will add one thing just before you get started. All along, it was your position that you should not participate in the buyback. And that was just your opinion. And I've also said that people will participate in the buyback because not everybody's in the same position. either to lose that money or to maybe they're getting older or whatever. There's a number of reasons why people would participate in it. And so I don't begrudge people for doing that. I do enjoy the mass non-compliance, non-participation. You're still in compliance because we're protected. But anyway, sometimes the people that do participate in it get a really good look at what the federal government is truly capable of. So I think you have some stories there.
Yeah, that's right. And that's why I don't beat up on these guys, because I wouldn't get to know what's happening if they didn't come to me with it. So yeah, while the rest of us are kind of on hold with the amnesty being extended out past the eventual court decision and the Supreme Court challenge coming up in November, the people who didn't fill out the declarations, of course, the government is still going ahead with that. And I know a lot of people were confused on that. So no, if you filled out that declaration, they're going to be contacting you looking for your guns. But it's not going very well. So I had a member reach out to me. He did the declaration. He was contacted for an appointment. So, okay, fine. They've scheduled the appointment. He shows up there and they stand him up. Nobody shows up. He checked the date, make sure he had it right. Yep, he had it right. Now he's driving around because he's got to go back home with these prohibs, right? So try and explain that to law enforcement. That could have been interesting. I had another member who received electronic confirmation. This is a digital copy of a receipt from the assault style firearm compensation program, confirming that he had turned in his newly prohibited firearms. The problem was he got that email a week before the appointment even was. So he still had his guns downstairs in his place, but he got confirmation they were turned in. And then I had another member, he did the declaration. He received a box, he received some paperwork and a tag to seal the box. And the instructions said, place the gun inside there, seal it up with this special tape, and the drop-off would be sometime in July. Then he hears absolutely nothing. So he gets a call last week saying they're going to send him a new box and he must rebox the gun in this new box and there'll be instructions to mail it in instead. Now, he called the program. Nobody there could help. They said he would get some more information in 7 to 10 days, and that actually would take him 5 days out the original deadline that they had given him. So I don't know what that means for him. And then I just literally, before we jumped on together here, I had an older guy. He's 73 years old. He's very educated. He's got 2 degrees. And he has been on the phone with these people, I think, 6 times, and he still has not managed to complete the process. So, yeah, this nightmare of a program, I am happy to report, is going like the miserable failure that it should. So for those of you out there who did fill out the declarations but have not turned in your firearms yet, it's still not too late to withdraw. If you do participate in the program and you've got a horror story, send it over to me at tracy.wilson@ccfr.ca. And I'd love to hear about this mess. So yeah, what a disaster.
Yeah, there's some interesting things there. And I think one of the more interesting things is when you get notified that you have turned in your firearms and whatever. I don't know if that gentleman got a notification that a check was on the way or whether they were going to pay him or how much you're going to pay him or whatever. I guess that's still missing. But when they tell you that you've turned in your firearms, you haven't, those firearms are likely struck from the registry, right? If they're ARs or something like that. Now those firearms have disappeared. Now they've been diverted, basically. How much diversion is happening in this program? How many firearms are now gone? They're just like literally gone.
I don't know. I think what we should do is bookmark this conversation and circle back in maybe 2 to 4 years and see if there's an increase in, you know, this style of firearm, these, you know, mostly semi-auto kind of cool guns. Let's see if there's an uptick in them being, you know, discovered on the black market and used in crimes, because I just feel like this is so sloppy. The call center is a disaster. They've outsourced that to some, you know, some third company or third party company. Like, this is serious stuff. Like, this stuff should be very tight. These are our firearms, and in the wrong hands, they can be exceptionally dangerous. But when it's this sloppy and there's no trail and you don't, you know, what do you mean I've turned in my guns? They're sitting downstairs. Like, I don't know. It's just, It's kind of crazy. And it just goes to show you what a nightmare. And this is with a very small percentage of compliance. So what would they have done if it would have been successful and they got everyone to comply? Like, they'd never handle it all.
Yeah. So. Well, they apparently have gotten 60,000 declarations for 60,000 firearms, but there are over 2 million in circulation. Can you imagine if there's 100,000 that were declared, much less 2 million? And I think, I don't want to go on too long on this, but I think everyone said the challenge that the government was faced with trying to administrate a program like this in a country that is 10 million square kilometers, not New Zealand, which is 1/10 the size, 10 million square kilometers, and people spread out all over all of it, and the number of models of firearms that they prohibited, we knew that it was going to be a disaster. Everybody said that. People within the government said that. The police are saying that, you know, but no, because this was about politics, and they weren't going to let, tragedies go to waste or political opportunities to punish the people that are unlikely to vote for them. They love that kind of stuff. And then to fool, like literally deceive the people that do support them and scare them, scare urban voters. Hey, we're going to get dangerous assault weapons off the streets. Well, they weren't. They were safely locked in our safes. But who knows how many other firearms are being diverted because of the holes in this ridiculous program that they rushed to put out there. So anyway, what a disaster, man. These people can't do anything right. Nothing.
It's just a very sloppy operation. Considering we're talking about, possibly 60,000 guns that out of the 2 million that they were trying to collect. But
what a disaster.
Yeah.
Worthless.
Yeah.
Worthless. Let's move on to something a little bit more positive and actually kind of exciting. So you were over at your range, EOSC, just outside of Ottawa for Ladies' Day. And then we've got kind of a little bit of a discussion to have around that.
Yeah, I mean, it's Ladies Day season. And of course, we've got these events all across the country. But it's, near and dear to my heart and special when I can host one at my home club. So we had a great event. We had 80 new female shooters come out. I will admit there was actually a couple of repeats from last year. I had one lady in particular, a little bit older lady, and she came last year. It was her very first time handling a firearm. Since last year, she told me she's gone out, she's got her firearms license, and now she's ready to go shopping. So she's looking for help with that. She's going to buy a gun. She wants to join a range and start practicing. So to me, that's really special. We had about 35 volunteers between CCFR volunteers and EOSC. We had these awesome loot bags that we gave the ladies. They were sponsored by Vortex Canada, Dirty Leather, and of course the CCFR. They had a beautiful lunch with salads and barbecues, and we gave away all kinds of goodies. But it was just such the vibes at these things. And even the volunteers said the same thing, that of all the events they work for the CCFR, the ladies' range days are their favorite because it's just positive vibes. The ladies are there with their girlfriends. They're hooting and hollering. They're cheering for each other. They're having a blast, literally. And it's super empowering. So, shout out to my range for putting up with me and, doing these events with me. It's great. I know we've got another one coming up this weekend at Lower Trent. And like I said, we do them all across the country, but ladies' range days have taken over our community by storm. Like, there's no denying that. They're everywhere and they're a blast.
They are a critically important activity that we've been doing for over 10 years, coming up 11 years.
Yes.
And we do them for a reason. So why don't we kick that around a little bit? Because we're starting to see the fruits of all of that work that's been going on over the last decade. So why don't you start it off?
Well, people always say to me in this fight, they want to see some sort of lasting change rather than gun owners just being this political football. The Liberals get in, they do a bunch of bad things to gun owners. Conservatives get in, they can repeal a little bit of it, and we're just kicked back and forth. Well, we don't have a Second Amendment. We don't have the same things that the Americans have. And I've always said the way to get any kind of lasting change is to de-weaponize the political advantages of gun control. And the way to do that is influence people's opinions about guns and gun ownership. And we know the best way to do that is take them to the range, take them out shooting. So for me, for women are critically important because women are decision makers in their home. Women vote. And they largely are the ones who support gun control. And, you know, for whatever reason, whether it's messaging from Hollywood or the media or politicians or all of the above, they're the ones who supported this, right? Like, think of the children, you know, you hear all this crazy talk. So when you're taking 4,000 women a year to the range every year, you know, and growing and more each year, this is going to have a positive impact. You think about it, 6 years ago or almost 7 years ago now, when Trudeau first started with the gun bans, these were largely supported by the majority of Canadians. Like, they were, whether we like to admit it or not, or whether it was reasonable or not, is irrelevant. The fact is people supported it and politicians do what people support. You look at the conversations now, the mainstream, you know, normies who are just, you know, average Canadians who didn't know anything about guns then and probably still don't now, that support has dwindled. It's done a complete 180. People are sick of the gun bans. They're sick of the money and effort being wasted. They see the crime and violence rising. Like that, I've said it before, that sponge has been wrung dry. And I don't know if we can attribute, you know, all of that to the women's program or range days or the CCFR or whatever, but I know that it definitely adds to it. You know, this is a long-term PR project. It's, you know, if we want lasting effect, it's not going to happen overnight. And we just have to keep doing this and doing it more. So if you're a range out there who's thought about doing a ladies range day, like don't put it off. Start now. If you need help, we'll help you. Yeah, you can send me an email anytime. But yeah, ladies range days are critical if you want to see less attacks on your community.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we've, yeah. It, you know, we can only take credit for what we've actually done, in my opinion. And I know that you, you feel the same. So we haven't, you know, overturned any laws in this period. We just haven't had that opportunity. We've been sitting under liberal governments, including four full years as a majority, the entire time we've existed. But yeah. If I were to take credit for something on behalf of the CCFR, it would be about changing the conversation in Canada, yes, about gun control and private firearm ownership. And I will say we have played a massive role. I won't say we did it all, but I'm saying we played a massive role in changing the conversation. And when you change the conversation about something, you change politics. You change the level of commitment that a ruling party like the Liberals are going to put towards gun control. If people don't care about gun control, they're not going to talk about it. They're not going to do it, right? So that's really important. And that dovetails, like, how did we do that? The ladies program is a huge part of that for the reasons that you explained. National Range Day is a big part of it. When you bring people shooting, they're like, yeah, this isn't at all what I thought it was. And even if they're still going to vote Liberal or vote NDP or whatever, for the 15 people that are voting NDP, you know, they still are just going to be like, yeah, but I don't buy into that gun control thing. That's BS. And and that looks bad on the Liberals or the NDP or whoever, right? They're just like, you know, you're lying to me about the gun control, but, you know, I'm a union member or my parents voted Liberal or whatever other reasons. And then you have a lot of people just walking away because you add that up onto the pile of lies that these parties tell the public and their own supporters in order to stay in power, right? So I'm just going to give you a couple examples. The Supreme Court, our journey to the Supreme Court, that has pulled the conversation into the mainstream, that has pulled that conversation into the highest court in the land. All the different programs, like we just talked about, the ladies program, National Range Day, our television show, first time the gun lobby ever had a TV show, we're going into our sixth season. Season six here in September, right? That's bringing gun owners together. That's keeping them informed if they're not on a mailing list or don't like to be spammed with emails. We have a class action that we launched. That's going to cost the government. That could potentially cost the government billions. That is incentivizing them to be like, we're done with gun control. We're catering to this small group within our base that are screaming about gun control. It hasn't worked. We're failing on public safety. This is costing us billions. It's an ongoing embarrassment. The police are against us. You see how all of this stuff, you know, adds up, right? It adds up to changing that national conversation. And then Let me add one more thing. Really, two more things. Just like I mentioned in the monologue, we're suing Yves Blanchet, a federal party leader. We have sued journalists. We have all kinds of, it's like people think that they can do whatever they want and no one can stand up to them. But because the community supports us, we are a group with the resources and the expertise. We're sophisticated enough to say, oh, you want to play that game with us? We can play that game. You know, to be where we are in as far as participation in elections, never before in Canadian history, right? So all of these things change the conversation. They de-incentivize governments. They de-incentivize people to badmouth gun owners and their organizations. There's all these things. There's educating the public, which is changing that national conversation. Speaking of education, we've done a lot of that over our time, right? In firearm advocacy. And we have a huge project coming up aimed precisely at that. I can't talk about it. It's going to be a couple months before I talk about it, but it's coming and it's one of the biggest things we've ever done. So these are all the things that come together to actually create change. It's slow. It is a pile of work. You know, a lot of people wouldn't know how much work that is because they never even tried it, but we've done it. It's taken over our lives, but it is starting to make a difference now. And this is what that difference looks like. I know that was a long explanation, but it's important.
It is important. And I'll just add one little thing to that before we move on. We've also dominated, not just on social media, which is incredibly important because more and more Canadians and just average people are turning to social media for a variety of reasons. And we have a great big presence there, but also just mainstream media. You've never had the gun lobby doing as many mainstream media interviews as we do. We've had syndication on CBC. Like, we've done like hundreds and hundreds of big interviews, right? And that helps because for those people who maybe aren't on social media or maybe a little older and they're, you know, at home watching legacy media. So it's just, yes, it's a combination. There isn't one thing, you know. People say to me, why do you do that? How do you know that's going to work? Well, I don't. And that's why I say we do all of it, all the way, all the time, because combine it all together and together it's doing a big job to change that conversation. And you have to keep at it and not take your foot off the gas, because as that conversation is changing and it's 180'd since where it was 6 years ago, we just have to keep going. And yeah, I mean, we're probably never going to get anything under a Liberal government, but even if we can stop the bleeding, it would be fantastic, right?
Yeah, so. Slowing things down, right? Making it difficult for them. All right.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's really important stuff for people to understand why we do all the things we do, why we are, you know, you and I are always talking about, here, I thought we would move on, but you and I are always talking about, you know, our workload and how hard our team, you know, fights and all of our volunteers and all the rest of that stuff, you know, and people feel like, you know, like, oh, we're, you know, we're constantly losing and it's not worth it. It's like, man, if we had given up, right, 6 years ago or 4 years ago when we lost the, you know, whatever, the third election to the Liberals, if we had given up there or just took our foot off the gas or whatever, where would we be now? Who knows? But we certainly wouldn't be in the position that we're in where we've changed the national conversation. So,
yeah, we're not quitting. And that's what we told gun owners and we promised it and we meant it and we've kept our word. So we're just going to keep going.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Speaking of volunteers, we wouldn't be anywhere we are today without our volunteers. Those volunteers are called field officers. So it's time to talk about the field officer of the month for July 2026. And that's our great friend, Matt Small. So thank you, Matt, for all your work. Matt, if you haven't heard of this before or you haven't or you forgot, what you get for being Field Officer of the Month, you get a year's free subscription to Canadian Access to Firearms, otherwise known as CATF. That subscription is donated to us every month by Donovan Dewis, fantastic individual. You get a $100 promo code. Of course, Ms. Wilson's a big fan of her promo codes. So you can get you some CCFR merch. And of course, our great friend Josh over at Dirty Leather has come in and said, I'm going to give a free belt. I think we're selling these for $100, free belt to every field officer of the month. So customized. So really, really grateful for that. So congratulations, Matt. And thanks so much for all your help.
Yeah, Matt's a relatively new volunteer, but I'm telling you, that guy, like, hit the ground running, and he's just everywhere. And I'm going to see him this weekend, so I'm very excited.
Awesome. Okay, now since we're talking about that, we need a little bit of help. So this is a call out for volunteers. If you want to become a field officer or help the CCFR in the Ottawa area. So we're a little light on volunteers because people volunteer. Sometimes they're, you know, they're just hammering in it for a year or two or five or 10, like some of our volunteers, and their life changes. And then they got to move on and they're not available to volunteer. So we need a little bit of help in the Ottawa area. So if you're interested in helping the CCFR, by putting some time in, we could really use your help in the Ottawa area. If you're interested, just send an email to volunteer@ccfr.ca. It's up on the screen for you right now. And let us know if you can help out. So maybe let's just take this opportunity to kick it around for a second. Ms. Wilson, what do field officers typically do if people are curious?
Yeah, well, there's all kinds of things to be done. First of all, gun shows and trade shows are a big one. You'll notice that the CCFR, you can go to the events page on the CCFR website, and we're at a ton of events. And that's fun. I mean, gun shows are a lot of fun. You get to go, you hang out, you meet like-minded people. A lot of these guys and girls have become like lifelong friends now, and they, you know, go hunting together and hang out together. But there's also range events, there's open houses, there's election stuff during election time, especially here in Eastern Ontario region, the Ottawa area. There's warehouse projects, and that stuff, like, you know, you'll think back to when we did the poster project. You know, we needed volunteers to go down. We literally had 400 tubes to stuff with posters and get them sent out to clubs across the country. We had trade show bags that we had to stuff with pamphlets to get ready for the trade shows last year. There's all kinds of stuff, but we get together, we blasted some tunes, we ordered some pizza, hung out at the warehouse, had some good laughs, and we got the job done, you know, 10 times faster than I definitely would have got it done myself. So it's volunteering. It's not volunteering for the CCFR is very different than volunteering anywhere else because it's not like work. It's like, I would say it's not just making friends with people, it's making family. And I know that sounds corny, but it's 100% true. You know, these people would do anything for each other, and I feel the same way about them. So yeah, if you've got a little bit of time to kill, there's, I don't think there's any specific minimum that you have to, you know, donate, but just come out. You can hang out with us. We have a great time. We run around all over the place doing all kinds of crazy stuff. Come along with us. It'll be a great time.
Yeah. So anyway, again, if you're in the Ottawa area, Eastern Ontario area, and you want to help out the CCFR, just reach out at volunteer@ccfr.ca, and we'll get you indoctrinated into the program, and you can do all of the things that Ms. Wilson had just talked about.
Yes, please.
Okay. Please. Okay. Please. We covered everything.
Okay. We did it.
Awesome.
Nailed it.
Exactly. All right. So the next podcast, we're still in the summer schedule, and it will be kicking off biweekly again for pretty much the rest of the year. I think you and I did the schedule the other day, and apparently we're going to get one extra week without TV and podcast over Christmas. And other than that, it goes all the way till the middle of next June.
Nice. Come on. You love it.
It's fantastic. I really love doing it. So the next one is going to be on or about September the 24th. Really appreciate all your support. As I mentioned in the monologue, there's a new contest coming. So keep your eyes peeled for a new video in the next week or so. And that's it. I think we covered everything. So thanks for the update, Ms. Wilson, and we will see you on the next one.
Okay, we will see you then.
This is another episode of the CCFR Radio Podcast. Remember, if you don't stand up for your own ability to own and use firearms, who will? Join the CCFR or donate right now at www.firearmrights.ca.